Welcome back to Hawk Talk, the official podcast of Hettinger Public School. I'm Joel Janikowski, your host, and we're here to keep you in the loop with the latest school news, offer insights from school board meetings, and take a deep dive into the educational experience our school provides for students, parents, and our tight-knit community. In this episode, we're privileged to have Adams County Sheriff Jordan Fisher. Jordan has been a dedicated member of law enforcement for the last 10 years. He has been a part of agencies large and small, and also was involved in the Dabble Pipeline protest, and now is leading an aggressive effort against drugs in our school and community. Throughout this episode, we'll explore Sheriff Fisher's background and dive into pressing drug-related issues affecting our community. We'll also discuss the psychology behind criminal behavior and addiction and highlight law enforcement's role in shaping safety and well-being for not only our students, but also the community. And remember, you can find any of our previous podcast episodes on any major podcast platform. Just simply search Hawk Talk HPS. Now, let's start the episode. All right, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Hawk Talk. Today I have with me Sheriff Jordan Fisher. Jordan's been here for the last 2 years, been a heavy involvement with obviously law enforcement, but especially our school and our community, having a heavy hand on taking care of drugs in our local area. And I just want to thank Jordan for coming in and talking to us today about the services that you provide, not only our community, but also how that affects our kids here at the school. So thank you very much for coming in.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me, Joel. I think this is a great platform for us to be able to kind of have a different dynamic. You know, we try to get into the paper as much as we can and do some articles there and go on KNDC, but this is just another form of media that I think is just fantastic for this community to have. So thank you for having me on.
Awesome. Thank you so much, man. So the first question that I just kind of want to get out of the gate is obviously just kind of the history, you know, where you came from and how we got to here, to this current moment. But before we get here, though, you just got back from kind of some unplanned time off.
Yeah.
So what happened? What did some medical stuff, or are you doing all right?
Yeah. So it was December 19th. So just before Christmas, I ended up having to go into the hospital, have my appendix removed.
And, oh, fun. Yeah, oh, that's so fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Being a little stubborn, I was like, man, I think I just got a little sick. You know, I have, you know, three kids. And I was like, man, maybe I just have like a little bit of a stomach bug. And no, it ended up being appendicitis. So went in and had to get that removed and doing really good now. The hospital staff, the nurses, and give a shout out to Dr. Andreas up there, the surgeon. She did an awesome job. So I'm feeling really good now. I'm back out on patrol and on duty and sitting at home for 6 weeks kind of started driving
me nuts. Was kind of a recovery process too. You couldn't just jump back into it because there's, I'm sure, weight restrictions and the whole slew of things that you can and also cannot do.
It was tough, man. That 6 weeks just being, you can only watch so much Netflix, right? So
you can only keep your mind so busy. You want to go and do things. So glad to have you back. Glad to see you back in uniform and stuff. So great to have you here. So let's go into the history. So how did we get to Sheriff at Hettinger? Where did that all start? Where are you from? How did you go, you know, into this field? All of that.
Sure. So originally I'm from Bowman and lived there all the way up until I was a junior in high school. Moved down to Rapid City and lived with my dad the last 2 years of high school down there. And while I was in Rapid City, the school systems down there have what's called an SRO, or a school resource officer.
Okay.
They're an actual licensed peace officer. They work for the, you know, Rapid City Police Department, but they end up coming to the school and they're there throughout the day, Monday through Friday, during normal school hours. And their job really is to, you know, make sure that kids are safe first and foremost. But they also kind of act like a counselor in a way. And so with me going to school down there, I've always been interested in law enforcement. That was always a career path that was always interesting to me. When I was in sixth grade, I still talked to my sixth grade teacher from Bowman, and we had to write this little project about where we saw ourselves when we were grownups, right? And on there, I put down that I was going to play football for NDSU, and that I was going to go and I was going to be an undercover DEA agent. Well, I didn't play football for NDSU, and I didn't go into the DEA, but, you know.
But the trajectory is similar.
Correct.
Similar.
Yeah. So sixth grade, I'd say, is kind of when I started having, you know, an interest in law enforcement.
Yep.
And I think a lot of that has to come down to Will Smith and movie Bad Boys, you know, because I was like, man, I got to drive like a Ferrari and like, you know, I got to wear like a, you know, like Miami Vice stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Every sixth grade boy's dream, man, is to drive a Ferrari around and go fast. My gosh. And,
yeah, be the coolest guy on the block, that's of course. It. Yeah.
And so, you know, did that and then went down to Rapid, got to really become pretty close to my SRO. He was a really cool guy. I'd go into his office during study hall period, and we would just talk about law enforcement.
Wow.
And yeah, from there, he suggested that one of his really good friends was a deputy sheriff for the Pennington County Sheriff's Office. He's like, hey, if your dad will sign off on a permission slip for you, you can start going on ride-alongs on weekends. They have what's called an explorer program down there.
Okay.
And so if you're in high school, you can actually start, you know, going on ride-alongs with officers. You can hang out at the department and really see what law enforcement has to offer as far as a career. And as soon as I did that, the first ride-along that I went on, he ended up chasing a guy down and arrested him. And I was like, that's for me, man.
That you was know? It. It was that it. Moment. Yeah. And you were like, I'm in.
Yeah. I mean, the guy was, the guy had a bunch of meth on him and he took off on a traffic stop and he got out of the traffic stop. He took off on foot. I saw the deputy chase him down and arrest him and, you know, pulled a whole bunch of meth off of him. And he's like, this is why we do what we do to keep this community safe. And from there I was like, this is for me.
So you mean you really, you built not only a relationship with this individual, you know, you kept, as a student, you know, we've kind of follow where our interest goes and the people that we click with and all that stuff. And you found somebody that you kind of built that relationship with and then found something that also kind of resonated with you at an even deeper level. So it kind of started at the school and then ended that way. So,
for sure.
So then you did that for a while and then I'm guessing you went to, additional schooling for it or.
Yeah. So, right after high school, I ended up moving back to Bowman.
Okay.
And, just kind of was trying to figure out what's the best path, you know, do I go to college? Do I wait until I'm 21 to become an officer and go through the academy that way? What's kind of the best, you know, course of action for me? Yep. Ended up going to, Bismarck State and wasn't really my jam, to be honest with you.
Okay.
You know, college just wasn't my thing, right? For whatever reason. Sometimes it's for people, sometimes it's not. And for
absolutely.
Me, it wasn't my thing. So I had a couple jobs where I worked for John Deere for a little bit and did some mechanic stuff. And I was really liking it a lot, but there's still like this voice like, hey man, you know, law enforcement's still here. This is what, you know,
it's still hanging around in there. Okay.
Yeah. And so I ended up going up to the sheriff's office in Bowman County, talked to the sheriff. I said, hey, I'm really interested in law enforcement. What's your recommendation? And the sheriff at the time goes, bring me your resume. I got an opening. And so, I went home and, I had a YouTube how to put a resume together because I never had to do that before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course.
You know, being a young 21-year-old kid, you know, I was like, I don't even know what that means.
So, yeah, what does that even look like?
Yeah, absolutely. So went and put together the resume that I had, got an interview, and I was hired that day. And so I ended up getting hired. They sent me through the North Dakota Law Enforcement Academy, which is in Bismarck. It's a 3-month training program that all law enforcement officers have to go through. And from there, ended up graduating. I was the class speaker, which was really cool. The class nominated me to be the speaker at our graduation ceremony. Wow. So that was a really cool honor, you know, to get there.
Yeah.
And then after that, it was just off to the races. And I've been in law enforcement for just about a decade now.
Wow. And it's been quite an experience. Cause if I'm correct, I think you told me before that you've even done some other big stuff of like, I think you were involved in some of the DAPL stuff, if I'm correct.
Correct. Yeah.
Like you've seen that side, you've seen many different facets of the law enforcement experience.
For sure. Yeah. I when I was with Bowman County, DAPL, ended up kicking off. And so I spent a fair amount of time over there and that was quite an experience in and of itself, you know, dealing with, you know, individuals that have a certain set of beliefs and, you know, even individuals that don't even believe in what the cause is are showing up and they just want to cause havoc and mayhem.
You have different elements of that party.
You do. I mean, you know, there were some individuals that were there that truly believed in their cause, but then you have other individuals that were coming from, you know, all over the country that just wanted to show up to just cause, like I said, like just absolute havoc.
Yeah.
And I mean, there was Molotov cocktails being thrown at officers, you know, we even got shot at.
Yeah.
And so dealing with that, it was quite the experience being in that deep of, you know, truly a riot.
Yeah.
And so it teaches you a lot of life lessons, you know, going through an experience like that. But also being able to really dive in and see firsthand the camaraderie that comes with this profession. You know, the true, you know, fraternity of law enforcement is that you have just this group of individuals that believe in the same mission, and that's to protect and preserve life and property. And you really start bonding, you know, together as this one cohesive unit that we're here to protect people. We're here to protect people's property, and we're going to go and do what we have to do to make sure that that mission's accomplished. So, it was a really, I wish I didn't have the experience.
I mean, but, at the end of the day,
I'm glad I did.
Yeah. Cause I'm sure that served you well, you know, coming over here, you know, being able to assess situations that any, you know, that you've been involved in, I'm sure that also now comes into play now that you've experienced that.
For sure. So. Yeah. You know, and I also worked down for the Belle Fouche Police Department for a while as well, and working for a larger agency, being able to be involved in a lot more high risk type situations.
Okay.
In Belle Fouche, you know, we had our fair deal of those types of situations over in Bowman County as well, but nothing on the scale or, you know, consistency, if you will, that it was like down in Belle Fouche. So that was also a very good experience. I had some really good guys that I worked with down there. And so it taught me a lot, and I'm very thankful for the experiences that I've had.
That's great. So now you're here, that brings us up to here. You know, we started from school down in South Dakota, correct? And, you know, working our way now, we're in Hettinger, and this is now your second year coming in, and, you know, it's been a busy 2 years.
It has.
Would you agree?
Yes. Yeah, very much so.
There's been a lot of things that you've been working on and doing, and, you know, as a parent, you know, and also just a community member, I just want to say thank you, because it's been, it's, you know, when I see updates and things like that, it kind of brings a person at ease a little bit, knowing that there's constantly things getting taken care of and cleaned up. So it's a big appreciation on my part.
Yeah,
so.
No, and we do, you know, what we do is we do it for you guys. That's why we go and we do what we do. You know, we just really believe that everybody deserves to be protected. You know, we don't care what background you come from. You know, we don't care who you are. It's our job is to make sure that everyone's protected, period. And that's what we go out and we try to accomplish that every day. So
that's great, man. Well, let's go into this next section here. Speaking of all of that, all the things, you know, that have happened in the last 2 years. So our second segment here, drugs in the community, school in general, those public releases that I was talking about, the public releases of recent arrests, drug busts, which, again, I say I love seeing those. It just, you know, kind of reminds you of all the work that's being done in the background that you don't normally see day to day. What prompted the start of those, putting out those public releases?
Yeah. Really what it comes down to, honestly, is that I'm a firm believer that transparency is huge when it comes to our profession. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't, what I like to say with the sheriff's office is that it's not my office. It's not my deputy's office. It's all of your office, right? You who live in Adams County, who's a taxpayer of Adams County, that's your office. I've just been lucky enough to be selected by the community to be kind of the overseer of it, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
And so with that, especially being in an elected position, right, is that it's kind of funny. Some of my friends that are in law enforcement, they're like, man, it must be nice to not have a boss. And I was like, actually, I got about 2,000 bosses.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, and so with that, with having the mindset of as an elected official, I have everybody that I serve is ultimately my boss, right, is that if I'm an employee, I should probably let my boss know what it is that I'm doing throughout the day. Right. Mm-hmm. If I'm not being productive, my boss should probably know that. If I am being productive, my boss should probably also know that too. Mm-hmm. So with those press releases, it's a really, I guess, simple way because they're not really long. It's just here are the facts. This is what we're doing. It's easy to digest and just look at of what it is that we're doing in the community. So that way the community doesn't sit back and say, man, what is our law enforcement doing? You know, we don't really know what they're up to. It's a way for us to be transparent. Now, with that, I fully am aware that there's some individuals who just rather not know. But with transparency comes good and bad. Right. Mm-hmm. There's good things that we put out there. There's also some disheartening things. Nobody wants to hear that drugs are in the community. Nobody wants to know that we have, you know, criminals in the community. That's tough to hear. Right.
Of course.
We want to assume that these things aren't happening. Mm-hmm. But I think that a different mindset of looking at it is that if we know these things are happening, then we collectively as a community can mm-hmm. come together and say, we know this is happening. How do we put a stop to it? Because we don't want this here. And
of course.
It's been great. We've had a lot of individuals come forward and give us a lot of really good information. Just for the audience, if you don't know, if you call us and you want to remain completely anonymous, that's where it stops. Your name is never
put. So you have that option.
We do have. Yeah, absolutely. Your name will never be in a report, nothing like that. You can just call us up and say, hey, I'm not going to tell you who I am, but this is what I'm seeing and what I'm noticing. Just want to give you a heads up. And from a law enforcement standpoint, an investigation standpoint, we might have all the pieces of the puzzle put together, but yeah. we might just be missing that one. And that information that you have, you might not think it's that big of a deal, might be that missing piece that we need to put our investigation together. So
yeah. super, super important. So it's a lot of, it comes down to that transparency and just yeah. keeping that open communication.
Absolutely.
That's great. So then obviously there's been, you know, the drug busting, you know, recent arrest with those public releases, but what other strategies or initiatives have you implemented to combat drug related problems in our area? So what are some of the initiatives that you've put into place for those who may not know?
Sure. So we work pretty closely with the Southwest Narcotics Task Force. We are a member of that task force. Mm-hmm. And these are dedicated individuals that come from different law enforcement agencies here in the Southwest, predominantly BCI or the Bureau of Criminal Investigation.
Okay.
Think of them as like a state level FBI, if you will. Yep. They're very skilled in that particular part of law enforcement, which is mm-hmm. You know, going after and arresting people who are dealing narcotics. That's what they truly specialize in, mm-hmm. and they're top notch. And then we work with them directly. Some of the other stuff that we've implemented is a program that's called Cellbrite. One of my officers is going to be certified in that. We've implemented that. And basically what that is if we arrest an individual,
yeah.
let's say it's narcotics, or let's say that it's even, CSAM material or child sexual assault material mm-hmm. is what we refer to it as. We can take a phone, a laptop, a tablet, any kind of piece of electronic device. Mm-hmm. We plug this into one of our computers that has that software on it. And then that officer will be able to download everything that device has ever viewed. Every
okay.
text message that's been sent, every phone call, GPS coordinates. So even when you've stopped, like your phone's tracking you wherever you go.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And so we're able to take the technology that we have from Cellbrite mm-hmm. and be able to build an even bigger case, which we've done before, where mm-hmm. we might arrest an individual who has, you know, some methamphetamine on them,
yep.
be able to get a warrant for their phone, download the phone, and then find out exactly who's selling it, and then be able to go and we've executed search warrants on that individual just by being able to gather all that information off of a cell phone. Wow. So that's a really, you know, key piece of technology that we have, as well as our canine program,
yep.
right? Our canine program has been doing excellent for us. Mm-hmm. She's just been a wonderful addition to our department. She's mm-hmm. she looks really mean, and but she's about the biggest sweetheart you're going to find.
Yep.
I mean, she's just awesome. And although we have lost our canine handler recently, we're in the process of going through right now and selecting a new canine handler. So
gotcha.
We still do
keep that in your system.
100%. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So we still have, her name's Athena. So we still have Athena. Athena is, she's an officer like everybody else.
Yep.
And so we're going through the process right now of selecting a new handler, mm-hmm. and we should be able to have one selected here within the next couple of weeks and
oh,
then
wow.
be able to send that officer through training, which fortunately for us, the training is all free, which is huge.
Yeah. You know? That's massive. And I'm yeah. sure that's a massive part of, be able to combat everything that you're dealing with right now is having that additional tool right there is
yeah.
I'm sure is amazing.
Yeah. It's huge. You know, without a dog, there's a lot of things that we just can't do. Having
wow.
that dog on a, you know, even on a traffic stop, for example, if we stop an individual that's transporting, you know, a large quantity of narcotics, whether it's methamphetamine or fentanyl or cocaine or whatever, you know, pick your poison.
Yeah.
Or truly. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, if we stop that individual, a lot of these guys are pretty seasoned that are transporting these narcotics. And so they know that if we don't have any probable cause to search their vehicle, and if we ask them if we can, based off of, you know, their consent, they're just going to tell us no, and there's nothing more we can do. Having a dog, on the other hand, it's called what's called a free air sniff. So that dog can actually go around the vehicle without a warrant or without consent or anything like that. The Supreme Court has said that the exterior of your vehicle does not fall within the Fourth Amendment.
Well, especially the air around
the air. Yeah. And so with that, she's been able to indicate on vehicles, and we've been able to get a very large quantity of illegal narcotics over the last just over a year that we've had her, where otherwise it would have been very difficult for us to be able to intercept those narcotics otherwise. So she's been a vital tool for us. Absolutely.
That's great. So, I mean, yeah, having those tools, not only the software you're talking about, but having her as available as well is, I'm sure, just massive. That's great. That's awesome. So those are some of the initiatives. What about, could you share some insights into the current drug issues affecting our community and youth? Because being that we've been kind of talking about it, you know, what are the issues that are affecting not only people inside the school, whether it be our students and all that stuff, but also people outside the school as well, the community. And then also too, what are the most concerning trends right now? We'll start with those.
Yeah. You know, speaking to the community first, methamphetamine is always been a massive issue that we've been trying to combat. For years now, law enforcement just in general has been trying to combat methamphetamine. We're not exempt from that here. I wish that we were, but we're not. And so when it comes to methamphetamine, what's extremely concerning about that is, number one, how addictive of a drug it is. I mean, it when people hear it only takes you using meth one time and you're addicted, that's true. It only takes the first time and it's pretty much game over at that point.
It's just a downhill.
It's sad, you know. It's very sad to see individuals that otherwise were very good, productive members of society, that for whatever reason, something happened in their life where they ended up turning to this substance to try to help them cope with whatever it is that they're dealing with. And they just end up losing everything because of this drug. Right. And it's really heartbreaking to see that. And then, you know, some of the other things that we've been dealing with, meth, like I said, meth is probably the biggest thing that we deal with. Now with Montana legalizing marijuana, we have seen a very large influx here in Adams County, just because Glendive is the closest place you can go. You can drive right up to Glendive, Montana. You can go into a dispensary, you can buy your weed and you can come back. Right. No matter what your views are, and this is kind of where I'll jump into, like, on the kid side of things, no matter what your, you know, political view is as far as marijuana goes, that I'm not really interested in. What I'm interested in is, how is it damaging our youth, right? Because that's huge.
Yeah. At the end of the day, that's what matters the most.
Yeah. And I think with marijuana, there's kind of this, there's this thought out there that it's just weed. I hear that quite a bit, like it's just weed. And we can have that conversation about adults. Right. We can talk that out. That's why we can go to the voting booth and we can make our decision on, is this something that we want to have adults be able to participate in? But when it comes to kids, we have to take a step back and we really have to ask ourselves, what is this, you know, substance doing to the brain development of our children?
And that's the key word, is development.
Yeah.
Because young minds, they don't stop developing till they're 25, which is a recent thing we've heard in the last 5-10 years is a new statistic that we've heard, which to me is mind blowing. Because, and especially right now in their teen years, where those things unfortunately do come into play, messing with that development, you're literally playing with trajectory.
You are.
At the end of the day.
You are. You know, we've been able to, with marijuana being legalized, for the amount of years that it has been, starting with Colorado and California, places like that, there's been some studies that have been able to be conducted where we have found, just like you said, that 25 is about when, you know, our brains kind of stop developing for the most part. And so when you have, you know, especially children, you know, if we want to talk about, you know, is 21 the right age? Is 18 the right age? I don't know. That's above my pay grade, right? Not a decision for me. That's a decision for lawmakers to make. But we do know that under the age of 25, your brain is still developing. And when we get even younger, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15, you know, those high school age years, our brain is just, you know, it's trying to figure out what it is that we're trying to do. You know, it's trying to develop in its own way. And if we add a substance to that, it really is messing with that brain chemistry. And what we know now is that individuals who are under the age of 25 that are actively engaged in the use of marijuana, they can develop, you know, mental health problems that they otherwise wouldn't have had. Depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder. They start developing those things that they otherwise probably wouldn't have developed because of how much that chemical, THC, or tetrahydrocannabinol, is the active psychoactive ingredient in marijuana. That's what gets people high. Mm-hmm. That has a lot of long-lasting and devastating effects on a developing brain.
Oh, I believe that. And yeah, because it's while that brain's developing and you're introducing those new chemicals that are so potent, so strong that can adjust how that development ends.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I can totally see that.
Yeah. And another big thing that we were seeing for a while, we've been able to nip that in the bud. We were able to actually arrest the individual that was responsible for it. But we were starting to see that a lot of the personal use marijuana that we were taking off of people, mm-hmm. We got information that actually had fentanyl in it.
That's the big one.
That's big.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fentanyl it's nothing to mess with. You know, I mean, the size of a grain of rice, will kill people instantly. Right. I mean, within a few seconds, you know, what ends up happening is it's an opiate, and opiate overdoses. What happens is that it'll cause respiratory depression to where the receptors in your brain will stop telling you to start breathing. So while we're sitting here, me and you are breathing and we're not even thinking about breathing.
It's an automated response. Yeah. Absolutely.
The process in your brain, it says, nope. We're not doing that anymore. And that's where Narcan comes into play. So what Narcan does is it goes to those opioid receptors in your brain. And Narcan is a drug, I guess, if you will, that we use. It looks almost like Flonase in a way, mm-hmm. where we put it up the nose and then we squirt it into the nose, mm-hmm. and it opens up those opioid receptors. So that way your brain will start telling your body, start breathing again.
Basically it just kind of overrides that.
It does. That
shutdown. Okay. Yeah.
But so we were really concerned there for probably a good 6 months that all of this marijuana that we were getting off of people here locally, we'd bring it back up to the office and we would test it. And sure enough, it would come back positive for fentanyl.
Now, for those who don't know, what is the reason why they put the extra additive in that drug?
Yeah, that's a common question that mm-hmm. a lot of people have, and rightfully so, because it doesn't make a whole lot of sense when you look at it from the exterior,
yep.
right? It's why would you put something in marijuana that would potentially kill your customers, if mm-hmm. you will, right? Seems like a bad business plan. Really what it comes down to is that you have to look at narcotics sales or drug deals or drug dealers as a business. That's what it ultimately comes down to.
I suppose, because right? that's the point of it even existing.
That's the point.
It's the money.
Yeah, they want to make as much money as possible. And for whatever reason, they've selected to go down that route. They decided that, you know what, I'm just going to be a drug dealer. I don't want to be a mechanic or a plumber or a teacher. You know, I want to be a drug dealer. Yep. And for whatever reason, we don't know why, they decided to go down that route. And for them, it's how much money can I make and how quick can I make it? And so when it comes to marijuana and some of the things that we've been told by individuals that we've interviewed is that the reason why they're adding methamphetamine to marijuana, why mm-hmm. they're adding heroin to marijuana, while they're adding fentanyl to marijuana, is that they see this trend that ultimately marijuana is going to become legalized in the state of North Dakota.
Because right? this is a new thing that has been starting for the last, would you say, 5-10 years?
Probably. I'd say probably around 5 years.
Yep, which is kind of when that conversation started to begin.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And now that we've seen that North Dakota has legalized medicinal marijuana, mm-hmm. Traditionally or historically, recreational marijuana follows pretty quickly after that, right? Mm-hmm. And so they look at it from a profit standpoint. Mm-hmm. If they say, well, you know, people can go over to Glendive, they can buy all the marijuana their heart desires over there and they can just bring it back. I got to start selling them something else. Mm-hmm. If I can't sell them marijuana, then I got to sell them something. Yeah. Right. And so they start putting these additives in there, you know, like meth, like heroin, cocaine. You know, we've seen a little bit of cocaine added into marijuana once in a while. You know, fentanyl. The problem is that you don't know where those drugs are coming from. Right. And that's the biggest thing. So even if that dealer isn't adding those things, whoever he's getting it from might be adding it or even further on down the line. And for that, we don't know. But here locally, what we do know is that the reason why things are added is to get individuals addicted to that substance. So that way they can transition selling that substance instead of marijuana. And not only that, fentanyl, methamphetamine, that's a lot more expensive of a drug than marijuana is. Marijuana is one of the cheapest drugs that you can buy. So just from a profit standpoint, it makes sense for them to try to get you addicted to this other stuff so they can make more money.
That makes a lot of sense. So, I mean, at the end of the day, they're saying, oh, yeah, you could go down to Glendive, but you don't have my stuff, is what they're saying.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. And it's tough because, you know, the last thing that we ever want is, you know, especially children. We don't want anyone to overdose, but especially children. You know, if children get marijuana, you know, if they know where to get it and they want to get it, they're going to. Good luck trying to stop a kid doing something that they want to do. They're people, right? Yep. I mean, if you're you know, set on this is what I'm going to do and this is what I'm going to get, it's going to be really hard to stop that in you know, the immediacy. So our goal is who's selling it, who's dealing it, and let's go stop them. Yeah, let's get them out of here.
Yeah, cut the head off the snake,
that's
essentially.
It. Yep, that's it.
Stay tuned. In this next segment, Jordan talks about the psychology of how people can become criminals as well as drug addiction. Don't forget, you can find us on any podcast platform that's out there. Just search for Hawk Talk HPS. Now back to the episode. Okay, so in our next question, in a prior discussion, Jordan and I dived into his collective experiences with individuals transitioning into criminal activities. Because, you know, you think about like, okay, so there's the drug problem, but like, how does a person even get there? And we were talking about how they get involved into that. And you noticed an interesting phenomenon. Now, this is not based off of like science or anything like that. It's just your own personal experience. And you noticed that it was quite evenly divided, that 50% arising from family backgrounds and 50% originating from challenging family backgrounds, excuse me. So 50 of them were from challenging family backgrounds and the other half was from just your, solid home life. So let's kind of talk about that a little bit. So kind of explain some of that a little bit.
Yeah, it's, I look at it and like you said, it's from my own personal, this is all anecdotal, right? There hasn't been any studies done by, you know, the FBI or the DOJ. They're kind of the two premier agencies throughout the country that really put a lot of statistics and data together over the years.
Yep.
So the DOJ, the Department of Defense, does a lot of that work. The FBI does a lot of that work. They haven't really done any study on this. There are people who go to college for criminology that have been trying to figure out what leads an individual down the path of crime.
Yeah.
They really haven't been able to figure that out yet. So
like nothing substantial. They're finding patterns, but it's nothing they can say it's this.
Yeah. They can't say this is why someone turns into a criminal and we know it. That hasn't been discovered yet.
Yep.
But from, you know, like I said, my own anecdotal, you know, observation is that an officer told me, a couple years ago, and I think that it's very true that there's two different types of individuals, right? There's a criminally addicted and then there's an addicted criminal. It sounds very similar, but they're very much different.
Okay.
So the criminally addicted are individuals who have always been criminals. You know, they started off maybe like petty theft or, you know, shoplifting
in their youth.
Yeah. Yep. And they just never got out of that. It just kind of built as life has gone on. Mm-hmm. And then for whatever rhyme or reason, they got into the drug world. Mm-hmm. Right. And maybe they started off by using, maybe they started off by just selling right away. Mm-hmm. But those are the individuals that cause a lot of damage. They're the ones that are selling the narcotics. They're committing burglaries and robberies. I mean, really serious violent offenses. Mm-hmm. Those individuals, in my opinion, they're the ones that need to go to prison. There's no other way to put it. They have to go to prison because we need to keep society safe from them. They're the ones dealing the drugs, committing all of the violent crimes. Prison's the place that they have to go. But then you have the addicted criminal. That's the individual who, if they weren't addicted to their substance that they, choose, they wouldn't be criminals. They are only criminals because of their addiction. So they're the ones that you see all the time on the news now, you know, going and stealing catalytic converters. That's a huge thing over like on the West Coast. There's a lot of individuals stealing catalytic converters. Well, they're stealing those to be able to go and sell them to make the money to go buy their drugs.
Yeah, they're doing whatever they have to get what they need.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, those individuals, from what I've seen firsthand, is that if you can get them help and they can go to some kind of rehabilitation center, right? And they can get off of those narcotics, they go right back to being a productive member of society. And so my opinion is that the individuals that are just the user, right? And I don't mean just, you know, derogatorily by any means, because it's a big problem. You know, having an addiction is nothing that we should ever, you know, just shake a stick at. I mean, it's a serious issue, but those individuals are not going to benefit from jail or prison. They're going to benefit the most from going through some type of rehabilitation. And going through counseling and trying to figure out what is it that caused you to go down that route of using and how do we get you out of those chains of addiction.
Yep.
And how do we get you back into society as a productive member of society? Mm-hmm. And so jail and prison, that's, I don't think that that is beneficial for those types of individuals.
Gotcha. So it's depending on the individual, some yeah. are just, you know, they just stay in that realm and others just need some help.
Correct. And I think, you know, where it comes down to that 50-50, you know, there's some individuals, unfortunately, that are just raised, you know, single parent homes. We see a lot of that where an individual is raised in a single parent home.
Yeah.
Predominantly it's by mom only. You know, dad's not in the picture. They don't have any positive male role models. And a lot of individuals that are in prison, that's kind of a common theme that we're starting to see. And that's what criminologists are starting to kind of hone in on. Like maybe mm-hmm. there's something here. But on the flip side of that, mm-hmm. we have other individuals that they came from a two-parent home.
You know,
they got good grades. They went to college and they did really well in college. They were professionals. And for whatever reason, they ended up getting addicted to some kind of substance. So that's where criminologists are like, well, what do we make of this now?
Yeah, because it's the polar opposite end and it has there's no reason behind it. They just decide. They're just like, I just wanted to do it.
Yeah. And, you know, a really interesting statistic that the DEA came out with, this has been quite a few years now. And I guess I haven't looked into it to see if the numbers have fluctuated. So this data is, you know, 5-6 years old that, that I'm, you know, giving right now. But 80% of all heroin addicts started off by being prescribed prescription pain medication.
Oh,
so that's something really important to keep in mind as well, is that, you know, we have an opioid epidemic in this country. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's all over the news, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not, we're not shy as Americans by saying we have an opioid problem here in this country, but we can also bring it back to the standpoint of, well, where did that problem come from? And we saw a lot in like Florida and, you know, West Virginia, Virginia, Kentucky, where there were these pill mills that were popping up. Doctors would go and they would just open up shop and they would call them pain clinics. You would come in and say, man, I got a really bad back pain. The doctor would say, perfect. Here's 90 pills of oxycodone. Have a nice day. But you would pay the doctor in cash, right?
Okay.
And that's where a lot of this stemmed from. And so what we're seeing now is that, you know, on an opioid level, and I'm not saying that opiates don't have, you know, their, you know, benefit. You know, I was just in the hospital for surgery and I had to be on pain management, right? Yep. Because I got cut open up the middle. So, I mean, I had to be on some morphine and some Dilaudid to help with that pain management.
Yep.
But when we had issues in this country, unfortunately that was shut down relatively quickly, not quick enough that people were getting severely addicted to.
And it started this whole,
it did
this whole thing.
It did. And so, with that, you know, that can also be a factor that we really need to consider and say, well, if individuals are getting addicted to prescription pain medication, and now all of a sudden we're starting to see an influx in, you know, heroin use, we're seeing an influx in, you know, cocaine use, we're seeing an influx in methamphetamine use. Yep. We have to look at the reason why, and usually it's follow the money, right? So an oxycodone or a hydrocodone or a Valium or whatever, you pick the drug that you want to that is normally prescribed by a doctor. Street value on those are upwards of $60 to $80 per pill.
Wow.
Right? And so those individuals can't afford that. You know, once their prescription is like, nope, we're not going to give you your prescription anymore.
Of course they're not. Yeah.
Yeah. They're like, sorry, you're addicted, but we're not going to give you your medicine. We're not going to, you know, help you find a different avenue and we're not going to try to get you help. It's just, you're on your own. Those individuals really have no other choice but to go to those street drugs. And typically they're going to go to heroin because heroin's an opiate and, you know, hydrocodone, oxycodone is an opioid. So they're very similar. One is made by nature, right? With the poppy plant and that's how heroin's made. One's made in the laboratory. But other than that, they're very, on a molecular structure, they're very similar.
And that's what the body's looking for.
Opioid receptors are saying, we need this because we have those opioid receptors in our brain saying, we have to have this. We need to go. Not only that, I mean, coming off of, you know, heroin or opiates, I mean, the withdrawals are very serious too.
Yeah.
So, and very, nobody very wants to go through that. So,
gotcha. So it's just one of those things where you got to be, if you're on those, or if you have to take those due to a surgery or, you know, an injury or whatever, you just have to be really mindful while you're on them.
Yeah, you do. Wow. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, let's wrap up with this, next question before we take a quick break. What about, like, could you discuss the role of community involvement in addressing drug issues and how can residents and parents contribute to the efforts that you're trying to make here?
Yeah, I think a lot of it comes down to, there's kind of an old saying, and I'm sure everybody's probably have heard it before. If you see something, say something. right?
Yeah.
And a lot of it comes down to that. I know we touched on it a little bit earlier, is that if you're noticing something, whether you think it's big or small, mm-hmm. letting us know might be that piece that we need, that we're filling, trying to fill the gaps, right? Because mm-hmm. we might already know that this stuff is going on. We might just not have enough information to, you know, bring it full circle to where yeah. we have enough for, you know, an interview or a search warrant or, you know, whatever it is that we're trying to accomplish with this issue that we're looking at. Mm-hmm. And so if you just call us, you can call us at our office number. You can also email us. If you go on the Adams County website and you go under the Sheriff's Office tab, all of our emails are on there. Yep. And if you want to remain anonymous, you just tell us that mm-hmm. and your name will not be put on anything. We just take the information that you have and we just go run with it. And we just try to, you know, develop what you're telling us and see if there's validity to it. Not that we don't assume that there's not. We always assume that there is validity.
But how does it fit with what you're looking at?
How does it fit? Yeah. Yep. How does it fit? And so that's a big piece that the community can do for us, is that don't ever think you're bothering us. You know, that's one thing that I've heard people say. It's like, oh, I didn't really want to bother you. This is what we get paid to do, you know, and we love what we do. And so by calling us, you're never bugging us. You know, by shooting us an email, you're never bothering us. I don't care if it's, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning or 3 o'clock in the morning. You know what I mean? It's, you know, any time of the day that you have something, get a hold of us. Let us know what you're seeing and we can go and we can take a look at it, because there might be something there that we don't even know about. You know, mm-hmm. we're limited on staff. Mm-hmm. You know, as far as the sheriff's office go, we take care of everything that's going on in the county and in the city. We don't have a city PD here. So with us being, you know, on the smaller side of staffing, we need that community help and we've been getting it, which has been great. But if anybody out there that's listening to this is like, you know, I've been really seeing something. I just don't know
if I should,
if it matters. It matters.
Absolutely.
It really does.
And at the end of the day, that can help get rid of more of that out of our community.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the day, almost make your guys' job a little easier, possibly depending on the information.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, as far as parents go, I think the biggest thing you can do is just have an open and honest conversation with your kids. Quite honestly, you know, I think that, you know, I was a kid once too, and you know, it's one of those things where it's tough. You know, I have a 12-year-old myself, and it can be hard. It can be hard to have those conversations. And sometimes we think that our kids might not be listening, but I think that at the end of the day, it'll give your child something to really consider and think about. And I think having that open and honest conversation about, you know, who are they hanging out with? You know, being mindful of who are you hanging out with? Where are you after school? Mm-hmm. You know, why are you coming home late? You know, if you start noticing behavioral changes in your kid where otherwise they're pretty laid back, relaxed, and now all of a sudden they're always amped up and they're, you know, maybe there's something going, why is my kid's behavior changing? Or vice versa. You know, my kid was always very active and now they're really secluded. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that it's drugs, right? I mean, there could be like some mental health issues that are going on.
Absolutely.
Or something like that.
But either way, you know, just getting involved and asking those questions.
Yeah. And it's not easy, right? I mean, asking those questions can be tough. Having those, you know, really deep conversations can be hard, but I think just being open and honest and having those conversations. And if you ever have any questions about that, you can always reach out to us and say, this is what I'm noticing. You know, what do you think? And, you know, we're not experts on mental health by any means. Mm-hmm. Right. But if you're finding certain things, you know, vapes are big, right? I mean, we see a massive influx on vapes right now. They might not just be nicotine, right? I mean, there's a lot of vapes that are out there and you can get a lot of cartridges, that are black market a lot of the time that have THC in them. And so, you know, those are things to be really mindful of. And so just those little simple things, you know, just having open and honest conversations with your kids and just really kind of being mindful that, you know, this stuff is out there. Peer pressure is a real thing. Mm-hmm. And just make sure that when you are having those conversations, that if your kid is involved in that, there might be something else going on. Maybe they are just being really pressured. Maybe they don't want to have these things, that they don't want to do these things, but they might be pressured in doing them. It's a real thing that we're dealing with right now.
Absolutely. It's a complicated issue because it could be outside entities peer pressuring. It could be internal struggles, like you said, mental health, just a lot going on.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about the face of law enforcement in the community and the school. And And welcome back to Hawk Talk. We're now starting this next segment here, which is the face of law enforcement in the community. I have with me Jordan Fisher. And our next question here, I want to talk about your approach to law enforcement. You know, your approach to law enforcement includes a significant presence at the school. Okay, because we see you here often, but could you elaborate on the importance of the presence and its impact on the students and community? Basically stating, as we see you here a lot, what good do you see it providing not only our community, but especially our students? How do you see it impacting people?
You know, I think it comes down to, and this term is used in a lot of different ways, but community policing is kind of the term that I like to use when it comes to us being involved in the school as much as we can.
Okay.
Whether it's here, you know, throughout the day, walking around the halls, talking to the kids, popping into classrooms, saying hi.
Yeah.
Whether it's being involved in, you know, coming and sitting down and reading with some of the kids. We've mm-hmm. done that before. Coming and having breakfast and lunch with the kids. Mm-hmm. You know, coming to sporting events. I think a lot of it comes down to that when we can be as active as we possibly can be in a school as law enforcement, it does a couple different things. It allows the kids to know who we are and mm-hmm. to see us in a positive light rather than a negative light.
Not just the badge, but the right. person as well.
Absolutely. You know, mm-hmm. and I think that there's, and it makes sense, you know, there's somewhat of a negative connotation towards law enforcement where it's like, oh man, I'm going to see you when you pull me over. You know, it's like, you only see me when I'm pulling you over for speeding or, yeah. you know, whatever else might come up. It's, mm-hmm. you know, no, we're here for you. You know, we're here to help you. And if a kid's going through something, we want them to be comfortable with us where they can come up to us and say, hey, this is what's going on. This is what I'm seeing. This is what I'm dealing with. Whatever mm-hmm. the case might be, they feel comfortable enough to come up to us and have that conversation with us. You know, first and foremost, is we just want the kids to be comfortable around us and they're not scared of us.
So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Because it's not just an entity of like, hey, like you're not supposed to do this. It's also like, hey, if I need help.
Yeah.
That's where I go.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, kind of more on a selfish side of things, it's good for us too.
Oh, I suppose.
You know,
I suppose.
Yeah, we deal with a lot of negative, unfortunately. You know, a big part of our job is dealing with stuff we don't want to, right? I mean, whether we're going to, you know, inform somebody that, you know, one of their family members has deceased, right? I mean, that's never fun. Or we just dealt with a really bad car accident, or, you know, you can pick whatever, you know, bad thing that happened that day mm-hmm. that we had to experience. It's really good for us to be able to be in a setting like this where, you know, one of the best parts of my day is being able to come here and I have like the little kindergarten class or like this first yeah. or second graders giving you high fives in the hallway. Mm-hmm. You know, that just brightens up our day too.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's just being here and then going to sporting events. It's really fun for us to be able to interact with members of the community because it's hard for us to try to interact with a lot of different people, you know, mm-hmm. throughout the community, throughout the day. But if we come to a basketball game or a wrestling tournament or a football game, you have a big chunk of, you know, the community that's, you know, congregated in one central location where we can have multiple conversations with people and people can come up and get to know us and we can get to know them too. Oh. And so that's really important for us. And, you know, again, it's kind of fun for us to just be able to, when we're on duty, if we don't have reports that we have to do or there's nothing, you know, going off, we can go and grab some popcorn and a pop and we can sit down and we can just enjoy a game. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's,
and be another member of the community.
That's it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's it. So,
absolutely. Yeah. So it's just building the relationship with the students and community members, not only as the badge, but as the person as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's great. So then could you share any specific success stories or examples of positive interactions between law enforcement and young individuals in our community? So anything that you've experienced personally that have been a win?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot, to be honest with you. I mean, most interactions that we have, I will say this about Adams County as a whole, you know, the last 10 years that I've been in law enforcement, this community has been phenomenal to work for. I mean, and even my deputies say the same thing that coming here, it was, you know, how is the community going to react to law enforcement? Cause you just never quite know how mm-hmm. a community might be. But the overwhelming just reception of us from the community has been awesome to see. I mean, just, you know, even if I'm down at DFC or at Come and Go or down at the Peacock or something like that, you know, mm-hmm. grabbing a coffee or, you know, grabbing something to eat for lunch or something and having people come up and shake your hand and mm-hmm. just ask you how your day's going is I haven't experienced that before.
And gotcha. So and you had that here.
Yeah, we've had that here, you know, and, you know, even like at ball games, right? For example, you have people come up and say, hey, thanks for being here. We would like having you around. You know, I mean, yeah. Just simple stuff like that.
Well, you're welcome to not only do the job that you're doing, but you're welcome in whatever space that you enter in.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's huge. It's awesome, man. I mean, it's just been, it's been like any other place I've worked, to be quite honest with you, with the amount of positivity that, you know, people have shown us as law enforcement. It's just, it's been huge. It's been huge. There's no other place I'd rather work. I mean, this has just been awesome. So,
wow. Okay. So, next question. So you have, speaking of, you know, community and the kids and stuff like that, you have that sheriff badge, that coloring contest that you were talking about.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell more, a little bit more about it, and also what's the purpose of it? Like, why are we doing it?
Sure. So, when it comes to patches, everybody's familiar with law enforcement, right? Mm-hmm. We always have a patch on our shoulders. I don't right now because I'm wearing a sweatshirt because unfortunately we have a little bit of freezing mist out there. Yeah. So that'll be, you know, great for the rest of the day.
Oh, for sure.
But typically we have patches on our uniform shirts. Mm-hmm. And with those, patches historically have been a representation of the community that you serve. You know, every police department has their own patch. Every sheriff's office has their own patch. Yep. The highway patrol has their own patch. Game and Fish has their own patch. So every, you know, department, if you will, throughout the entire, not only just country, but really the world. I have patches up in my office that have been sent to me from people from Germany and Switzerland. I have one from South Africa. I mean, it's really kind of cool to see all these different patches. Mm-hmm. But a patch is a representation of the community that you serve. So it's that kind of direct representation. And usually they have some kind of imagery on it that is a direct representation of your community. And it's really cool when you go to like a sheriff's convention or a training or something like that. And we're always looking at each other's patches. And it's just, yeah. It's kind of one of those neat, it's like, it's almost like trading baseball cards when you're a kid.
But like, at a higher level. But
I mean, that's kind of what it is. It's like, man, I really want, you know, LAPD's patch, or I really want, like something like that. And so with that, historically, kind of what has happened with a sheriff's office, at least, I'm not sure about a police department. I guess I've never really asked, but with a sheriff's office is anytime that there's a new sheriff that's elected, they change the patch.
Gotcha.
And that's just kind of I don't really know what you call it, but
like a procedural kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just kind of putting a different mark, I guess, on the office. Yep. Right. And so, when Travis Collins was a sheriff here, I'm sure everybody's familiar. And if you're not familiar with the patch, it's a buffalo. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's a setting sun or a rising sun, but there's a sun depicted behind the buffalo. And with that, it obviously comes from, this was the last great buffalo hunt, right? Everybody's familiar with that. And so, with me being elected back in 2022 in November, I've been kind of, you know, figuring out what is it that we want to do for a new patch? What direction do we want to go down? Mm-hmm. And from there, kind of just spun out into what we have right now. We just kept adding ideas on top of ideas. And it started from, well, I can't draw. Can anybody else draw? You know?
Yeah.
And everybody else is like, no, we can't really draw. So, you know, we were like, well, we'll go talk to Andy Rail, who's an incredible artist, right? And we'll be like, we'll just see if Andy can come up with something, and then we'll go from there. And then it came down to, well, if this patch represents Adams County, maybe we should have people from Adams County design the patch because it represents the community. So why don't we have the community design what they want to represent them? Right. Yep. And then from there it spun into, well, kids might feel left out. So maybe we have a separate contest for the kids. Yep. And then it turned into what we have now. So we just kind of started adding on, you know, different layers as we were going through this. And ultimately what we came up with is that we will have a different patch contest a little bit later in the year from the community as a whole. That'll be our permanent patch.
Oh, okay.
But right now what we're doing for the kids is that as we were kind of discussing this, we found that this might be really fun for, you know, the preschool through sixth graders to not feel left out. Right. But then we're like, well, maybe we'll just have them design a patch. Mm-hmm. Once they design it, we'll make them a junior deputy. They get their own patch that they designed, right?
Yeah.
The winner.
Yeah.
And then from there, we'll actually wear their patch on our uniform for the last month of school to represent their patch that came from the school.
So they feel tied and connected with you guys. So building that relationship.
Absolutely. And then from there, we found out through conversations with the school that, you know, my mom was in education for 30 years. My wife is a teacher here.
Yep.
And just through that, I know that music and art are always really tough programs to try to find funding for.
Oh yeah.
It just is. And you know, out here in rural North Dakota, I think the state forgets about us sometimes a little bit. And so trying to find funding is really tough for those things. Mm-hmm. And so we started talking about, well, instead of us just voting on the patch, why don't we let the community vote on it? Let's have, you know, some kind of monetary donation, like a free will offering, if you will, mm-hmm. right? That if you give $1 or $100, it doesn't matter how much mm-hmm. you give, but when you select what patch you want to see win, mm-hmm. you add, you know, a monetary amount to that. We take all of that money and we donate it back to the school to help fund wow. the art program. Because in my opinion, art is such a therapeutic thing, I think, for a lot of kids, because they don't have to think about anything other than just draw what they want to draw.
Yeah.
But there's no pressure. There's no stress. There's no test that you have to get an A on. You know, it's just you, a piece of paper or whatever, right? Yeah. And just let your creativity just flow and see where it goes.
Yeah.
And so we're like, if we can be even just a small part of that, and that's where it comes back to, you know, serving the community again. How can we not just protect this community, but how can we serve
it
this
as well.
Community as well? And that's where we're at with it. And it's been pretty cool, man. Like seeing all, we had 96 entries.
Oh, wow.
From the elementary.
Okay. So quite a few.
And I tell you what, some of the artistic ability that these kids have is just amazing. You know, I mean, through, you know, preschool through sixth grade, it's just awesome. And then it's also really fun to see what these kids come up with, right? I mean, we have everything from, you know, a cowboy standing like, you know, in a field to a purple octopus.
Fantastic. You know? That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. And everything in between. So it's been really neat, man.
That's awesome. So with that, building the relationship with the younger kids, with that note, there's another section that I wanted to quick talk about. When you and I got together last time when we were in here, you told me a quick story about how, you know, we're trying to build relationships with the kids, but sometimes you experience moments where there's that joke of like, oh, the cop's here, you got to be careful, you know, and it kind of creates fear with the kid and the law enforcement. So. Yeah. Like, if I'm correct, it happened with a kid and a parent or something like that?
You know, and that's, we never look at the parent as trying to be malice, right?
No.
In what they're doing, no. You know, they're trying to make a joke. And sometimes, though, the way that it's presented might be a little intimidating. Mm-hmm. For the kid, because they don't understand two adults joking back and forth. And trust me,
I don't pick up on it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, I love getting picked on more than anybody, man. Like I like a good session where we're just, you know, tossing stuff back and forth. Right.
Yep.
And, but yeah, I mean, for one example, you know, I was outside of Come and Go and I had a parent and the parent said, hey, you better be careful or else he's going to take you to jail because their kid was, you know, being a little rambunctious.
Okay.
We'll just put it that way.
Yeah. He's right? Like, oh, hey, there's the sheriff. Here's my time to get my kid in line. And boom.
Yep. Yeah. And what's hard about that, and I don't think people really, you know, think about it. Like I said, it's not coming out of, you know, it's not malicious, right?
Yeah.
You know, at all. But with that, it makes it tough on us because now that kid has a negative perception of us is like, oh, if I'm acting this way, they're going to be the ones that take me to jail.
And then you become a negative entity in their mind.
Yeah. Because we become the face of discipline. Right. Mm-hmm. In a negative way. Yeah,
yes.
Absolutely. And so, I joked back and we had the parent and I actually kind of laughed about it. Cause I go, well, actually, if he doesn't knock it off, I'm gonna take your dad to jail. And the dad started laughing and the kid, you know, kind of was like, what is going on?
Yeah.
And then I reflected back on it. I was like, probably not the best thing to say. You know what I mean?
It's
like,
from a kid's perspective.
Yeah. From a kid's perspective. Right. Yep. So, I mean, I'm guilty of it too. Mm-hmm. But you know, both of us laughed about it and we had a good time. We ended up, you know, talking for, you know, probably, you know, a good 5 minutes, you know, and then by the end of it, I gave, you know, the kid, you know, gave me some knuckles, you know, and he was laughing and having a good time too. But that's tough. You know, when you, like, I get it, but at the same time, you know, it just gets difficult on our end because we don't want the kids to perceive us that way. We want kids to perceive us as the people that are coming to help. Right.
Yes. So at the end of the day, that's what it needs. Yes. There's disciplinary, but we need to bring in the positive too.
Very much.
Absolutely.
Very much. Yeah.
Great. So I think there's only two more questions left and we're going to wrap up here. So this second to last question is, are there any upcoming projects or initiatives that you'd like to share with the community in your role as sheriff? And then also too, I heard that you guys got new cameras. So like any new things coming down the pipe?
Yeah. So when it comes to body cameras, I'm actually wearing one right now. Maybe everybody can
see if we can get in a little tighter here. There we go.
Yeah. So this is one of our body cameras that we have right now.
Yep.
It's made by a company called Axon. They've been around forever, right?
Okay.
And so with body cameras, like right now it's completely turned off. The way that we turn it on is there's just a little switch up here that we just switch on, and then it starts blinking red. We just hit the center button twice. It turns on. We hold it down for about 5 seconds, and then it turns off, right?
Okay.
So it's pretty simple on how it's used.
Yep.
Some people ask us why we even have body cameras, which is a valid question. Like, why are you guys wearing cameras on yourself? You know,
yeah.
And really what it comes down to is it's kind of multifaceted. It really, in a way, number one, it's to protect the officer.
Yep.
Number two, it's to protect the public. Right. And number three, it's evidence gathering. So when it comes to protecting the officer, if we're in a really bad situation, right. Mm-hmm. You know, having to go hands on with an individual or, you know, God forbid there's any kind of, you know, lethal force or, mm-hmm. you know, anything like that. We want to have that recorded to be able to potentially show a jury what went down. I mean,
what exactly happened.
Yeah, you're watching a movie. Mm-hmm. You know, like, how did it transpire? Why did it transpire? And how was it ended? And everything in between, right? And so a jury can watch that video just like watching a movie,
mm-hmm.
Where otherwise it would just be us reciting our report. Well, in my opinion, especially now with the digital age that we have, who doesn't watch YouTube or, you know, Hulu or Netflix or whatever your,
yeah.
you know, media source yeah. is, everything's on a screen. So if we can show you what happened in real life time mm-hmm. and you can actually see it from the officer's perspective, mm-hmm. I think that's a really good thing.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, number one, you know, and then also protecting the public too. You know, if officers are acting in a way, that's unbecoming, right? I need to be able to see that as a supervisor. And so if there's a complaint that comes in, mm-hmm. I can go down and I can actually review that officer's body cam footage and see if there's any validity to the complaint that's coming in. And if there is, there's disciplinary action that I can take,
of course.
Right? If there's no validity, well, then the officer's covered now too. So it mm-hmm. keeps everyone accountable. That's, I think, probably the main takeaway is that a body camera and recording, it keeps everybody accountable.
And it's a neutral piece of
it
evidence.
Is. Yeah.
Because it's literally
just an inanimate object just sitting on our chest.
Absolutely.
You know?
So yeah. Then with those, are those a thing that last all day? Like, or do you have to charge them multiple times throughout the day?
Yeah. So it really depends on how much use they get, right?
Oh, okay.
So like right now it's completely off. It's not recording whatsoever. It's mm-hmm. completely dead. It's off.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we run it, yeah, the battery drains, but actually the batteries on these are actually fairly good.
Mm-hmm.
And you just plug it into the computer. And as it's downloading all of the footage, mm-hmm. it's recharging it at the same time.
As it goes.
Yeah.
Okay.
The reason why we're going with new body cameras and then also the dash cameras that we have are the cameras that are inside of our vehicle.
Yep.
Those get activated a couple different ways. Typically when we activate our lights is predominantly when they get activated, we can manually activate them by pushing the record button.
But by activating your lights, it kind of automates that process.
Yep. It's automatic. As soon as we flip our switch to activate our overhead lights, that camera's on and it's rolling.
Okay.
Right. And again, it's the same kind of thing, right? I mean, it's showing like if we have an individual that's driving under the influence, right? Mm-hmm. I might push record while I follow them for, you know, a couple hundred feet just to kind of show like how bad they're swerving
before lights even come on
yep. just so that way the jury potentially has an idea of, well, why'd you even stop the guy in the first
yep.
place, you know, because that's always a question.
Yeah.
Right? And so, but with this, the body cams that we have now, they're about 10 years old, maybe 12, from my understanding. I know 10 for sure.
Yep.
I know they're for sure 10 years old just because of the model.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, we can't really get any updates to them anymore just because of how antiquated the model is.
Yep. And, right? And for those of you who, you know, may not be tech people, from the tech world, 10 years is like the deadline of cutoff. Like if you have tech that's 10 years old, I guarantee you if it's still running, you need to get rid of it. It's it's one of those situations where you're almost probably running a risk of the actual device shutting down mid-situation.
Correct. Yeah, and we don't want to have that problem.
No.
I mean, if we're involved, like let's say, you know, we're involved in a, you know, like a search warrant, mm-hmm. for example, right? And we're having to go into a house and all of a sudden, you know, my body cam just quits working because it's just like, I'm old, I'm done,
mm-hmm.
right? Now, what do we do? I mean, that's a really big thing that's in the back of your head, especially, you know, from a supervisor standpoint. It's like, man, we can't have that happening.
Not at all.
You know? And so we reached out to a company, they're called LensLock. They're relatively new in the space, but the individuals that have started the company actually come from Axon. And then they also come from another company called WatchGuard. WatchGuard is another very highly reputable company in the body and dash cam world. Axon is probably the premier when it comes to they're like the BMWs, and you know, Watch Guard is like, you know, the Mercedes, if you will, you know what I mean? But they're very top tier. Well, there were some individuals that worked for these companies that said, you know what, we can make a better product. Let's go start our own company. Right. I mean, it's kind of your traditional American story, right? It's innovation. Yep. It's like, yep, I work for this company. I learned everything I need to learn. I'm just going to do it better now.
Yep.
And so that's what Lenslok did. We reached out, we had multiple meetings with them just to make sure that they're going to be the best company for us to work with. Mm-hmm. And ultimately went with them. We got body cams and also dash cams. And really the kind of the neat thing, the benefit that they have over some of the other ones is that we actually get, everything will be sent right to the cloud. So, so all of the evidence that we have on our body cams that's mm-hmm. recorded automatically gets uploaded to the cloud. So that way it's not actually stored on the physical computer itself.
So right? Is that connected to your guys's network connection your laptops use and all that stuff? So it's happening as it's uploading as it's happening.
Yeah. It's all connected. That's massive. Yeah. It's huge, you know, and because the last thing that we want to ever happen is that, you know, if we have a file on our computer, right? Mm-hmm. And that's where all the body cam footage is, and something happens to that computer, that stuff's gone.
Yeah, you're done.
I mean, we have redundancies in place. Like for us, once a month, I'll go in with an external hard drive and I'll take and I'll copy everything over. So everything's still on the computer, but it's also, we have copies of
it.
So if something happens, but then now that's extra tax dollars that I have to spend on external hard drives, right? I have to store it. What happens if, you know, something happens to external hard drive? I mean, it's just another piece of plastic, really, at the end of the day, that what if something happens there? So you can have redundancies in place, but to me, it just makes sense to have everything uploaded to the cloud, and then you just don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, it's there's no redundancy needed most of the time, and that's a very efficient system.
Yeah, and so that was our ultimate decision on going with them is evidence retention. It's like, how do we retain all of this evidence without worrying about it ever getting lost or destroyed? Mm-hmm. Cloud makes sense to me.
And then it saves you guys so much time.
A ton. Because
I'm sure it's quite a bit of time just taking the old footage, old systems and all that stuff.
One video will take, you know, 10 minutes, 15 minutes just to download one video right now with our current system.
Yep.
I mean, if you think about it, if you have 10 interactions throughout the day, you're sitting in the office for quite a while because you're not going back on a patrol without your body cam on.
And the biggest thing is too, because you guys have state provided internet, if I'm correct.
We do. Yep.
Okay, so with that, and being that I've worked here at the school, state provided internet is vastly superior to your traditional home internet.
Very much.
And the fact that it takes that long.
Yeah.
And you have superior internet really states how large these files are.
Yeah. I mean,
how much time it takes from you.
Multiple megabytes and gigabytes. I mean, it's just, you know, and so with, and even with the state internet too, you know, what's nice about that is everything is so secure. Like it's so encrypted. It's just, you know, the encryption's insane. Right.
Oh, yeah.
So
their stuff's top notch.
Yeah. I did have one individual ask me if I was concerned about any kind of data breach. I was like, no, that's not even.
Not with our state. No.
I was like, that's not even a thought that came to my head because of how, I mean, working with the state, just like you do, you know, the IT guys, those guys are, I mean, they're insane. Like the amount of knowledge that they have. And as far as North Dakota, our technology on the state side is top notch.
Aggressive. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So
that's really great. So then let's kind of round out with our last question here, which is just pretty much, what message would you like to convey to our community about the role of law enforcement and your commitment to making our community a safe and positive place for everyone? So pretty much final thoughts.
Yeah. So when it comes to law enforcement, I know we've kind of touched on, but just, you know, kind of a final, you know, thought or final thing is just at the end of the day, we truly are here to help the community. That's why we got into this, you know, as law enforcement officers, it's how do we help? And we just felt that the best way that we can help is by being in this role. So at any moment, at any time that you have any questions, feel free to ask us. You're not bothering us. I promise you, you're not bothering us. If you need help with anything, let us know. Even if you just want to stop in and you just want to chat, got a coffee pot, coffee's always on. We're more than happy to just sit down. I did have an individual come in the other day who's not from here. They moved to this country. They're from a different country. And he's like, I got some questions about the Constitution. I was like, oh boy, you're going to test me here, aren't you? You know?
Nice. Okay.
And, but they're just really curious, right? I mean, their questions were on the First and Second Amendment. They were just really curious because the country that they're from, they don't have those freedoms that we have.
So they're like, well, how does that even work here?
Yeah, then? Like, how does that work? You know, I mean, and so it was really neat sitting down and just having that conversation where I got to talk about their home country and they got to ask me questions about how does America operate and how do we work? And, even just something like that, that it just, it kind of breaks the day up for us.
Right? Yeah.
And, but ultimately at the end of the day, we are here to serve the people. We truly are. We might have some disagreements on a few things, right? But ultimately at the end of the day, collectively as a whole, if we can all work together, that's what makes this community as good of a community as it is, because I think we do a really nice job of all working together and going for the common goal, which is how do we make this place as safe as possible for our kids and for our families?
Absolutely. And that's the main goal. And that's the reason why I brought you in here, is because there's so many things that you've been involved with that have been helping our community grow and prosper and thrive. And I just want to thank you very much for coming in and doing this podcast with us and giving us your time. I'm glad to see you're back in uniform again and things are going well. And it was a real treat to have you here and sharing everything that you know and everything you're experiencing.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
As we conclude this eye-opening episode of Hawk Talk, we would like to give a special thanks to Sheriff Fisher for sharing his expertise and insights with us. Your dedication to our community's safety is truly commendable. Now, if you enjoyed this podcast and would like to listen to our other podcasts, you can easily find us by searching Hawk Talk HPS on Spotify Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and of course, our YouTube channel. Thanks for watching.